Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Desires are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. The dharmas are boundless. I vow to master them. The Buddha's way is incomparable. I vow to attain it. Good morning. This is Michael's first time here. It's nice to see him. Hoping to have lots of first times here over the next couple of months as people start to feel comfortable about coming back to the Zendo. So, retreat weekend. This feels like a continuation this morning. It's much easier to sit for half an hour than all those hours we sat yesterday. I used to have a bumper sticker on my car that said, "Don't believe everything you think." I'd like to change that to, "Don't believe what you're programmed to think." So from Buddhist teachings, from the perspective of Buddhism, you know, we have these different forms of consciousness because of our senses and body and awareness of these. We have, you know, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, discriminatory consciousness, and repository consciousness, where everything that we've experienced and have made these discriminations about are stored. So there's a sutra that I just want to mention a few little pearls of wisdom from. This is a conversation between Mahatma Bodhisattva, the Buddha. It's in the Lankavatara Sutra, which is one of those, it's a very difficult sutra to understand and to read. And it's very long and hard to wrap your head around it, so to speak. But I've been dipping into it from time to time. It's popular in Zen. And I think the main reason for that is that this sutra in particular, it points to your own mind and your own experience. And it's just an expedient means that keeps turning things around, pointing back to you, so that rather than being an authority and someone you look up to, it keeps pointing back to your own mind. So in this particular paragraph, Buddha's saying to Mahatma, the Dharma Mata Nishayananda Buddha, don't worry about that Buddha, it's just one of the many Buddhas, teaches that the individual and the shared characteristics of every Dharma are due to the habit energy of the perceptions of the mind and to the continued attachment to an imagined reality that is no more real than an illusion and one that cannot be grasped. So the individual and shared characteristics of every Dharma, that means all experience, Dharmas are everything, are due to the habit energy of perceptions of the mind and to the continued attachment to an imagined reality that is no more real than an illusion and one that cannot be grasped. Moreover, Mahatma, an imagined reality arises from attachment to dependent reality. Mahatma, it is like when a magician uses materials such as plants and wood and tiles and stone to create an illusion and conjures the appearance of different creatures, which then give rise to different projections, but projections that are not real. Recently, you know, I use my Google News sometimes to catch up on articles, and I tend to go to the reliable news sources, but every once in a while, one of these clickbait ads grabs my attention. And I always get annoyed at myself after I find myself on this site with a lot of fluff and a lot of links that are just designed to do just that, grab my attention. But what are we talking about here? We're talking about social media. We're talking about clickbait. We're talking about being a news junkie, We're talking about fads that we grab onto. So we all get fooled. So the wonderful thing about our practice, about Zen, is that it doesn't rely on words, sutras, dharmas, but on your own mind. My son and daughter, who went to a Montessori school, said, maybe I've already told you this, but said to me that they were very happy that they grew up that way because they learned, about critical thinking, thinking for themselves, and how important that was in terms of setting the tone for their lives and understanding how the world worked. When we're not relying on our own mind and we're relying on experts, that's the clickbait. So not to sound too cynical, not that there isn't information that's useful. When I want to fix my sink, I Google it, how to repair the sink, and I get real specific instructions. Rarely do I get clickbait. So there are lots of people who are very sincere in giving useful information to us through social media and through the internet and all of that. But we also have to weed through the weeds. That can be frustrating sometimes. But don't doubt yourself. Don't doubt the wisdom that comes through your own self experience of being open, clear like space, dropping your deluded views of how the world works according to the things that you've adopted, the programming that you've assumed is who you are and what you are. A Zen practice is about awakening. Awakening to what? To what is real, to what we really are, who we really are, not what we're projected to be. I just read from the sutra that was written 1,000 years ago. 1,000 years ago, telling us how the mind works. We think we're so smart today. We have all this technology at our disposal, yet we're constantly being manipulated. How smart are we? So being a critical thinker, being in the moment, having a mind that's clear like space, and seeing what the intention is. So this question that we ask, what is this? I approach everything that way. I open an article, immediately assess, what's the intention here? What are they really after? Is this a clear, helpful response to information that I need, to end suffering? Or is it contributing to more suffering, but just sending you down the rabbit hole of just another deluded view? How many times has coffee been good for you and bad for you, according to the statistics, the analysis of the experts? Come on. Every situation karmically is a different situation for each of us. And each of us is unique in terms of our own needs. What works for one of us won't work for the other one, no matter how many experts claim it to be true. But when it comes right down to it, I have to pay attention to what my body needs, what my system needs in this moment, in this time, in order to stay healthy. I can't be relying on what some other says I should be doing. Although, you still have to know how to fix the sink. You still have to know how to cook your meal. You still have to know how to chop wood, carry water. It's not this, it's not that. So critical thinking is just about being open to what's real and dropping your assumptions about what works and what doesn't. We live in a capitalist society, right? So on one hand, they're trying to sell you something, on the other, yet what they're trying to sell you could be helpful and useful. So you have to use your own discrimination and decide, well, is this for me? You have to have faith in your original nature. You have to have faith in the perfection of who you are and trust. That trust in self is at a whole different level than the persona, this built up, imaginary, deluded perspective, idea of self that's been built up in the repository consciousness, adding more and more stuff to the persona. Our karma arises from our habitual habits, continuously doing things over and over again in a certain way, habitually. Not what's demanded in this moment, not what this moment requires of us, but what our habit energy tells us we should be doing. When we've been manipulated into thinking a certain way, we just keep that habit energy going. So this isn't just one lifespan. This is the human experience. But every situation calls for something different. What's right in one instance isn't right in another. So that's why in Zen, do not rely on words and sutras, but on this mind alone. Be clear, understand your own nature, understand who you are, what you're doing. And that's where it is at. So that's my little rant about all of that. Back to the moment. Back to emptying it all out so that we're clear. We can be free and we can be completely involved in all of this life as it is. And when we get distracted, we can notice it. And then we're no longer distracted because we see it. When that clickbait gets me, thank you very much. Moving on. One of the Zen masters I know says, only go straight. Don't make. Only go straight. Don't know. Don't make, don't know. Only go straight. That's all you need to know. The rest of it you can drop.
Yeah, so I had an interesting sit today, taking with me what I came to experience or realize yesterday. It was much more difficult, my sit today, than it typically is, because now I have the additional issue of trying to come back to the moment, which I thought I was in, but I wasn't all that time. I kept going with these distractions. And so the typical distractions came up, and it was very distracting having to deal with the distractions. But it was, I feel like I've made progress. So it's kind of like I have to be patient with myself, you know, learning any new task or a way of doing things. It's more error, trial and error, and failing than it is succeeding, at least at the beginning. Realizing that I have certain biases, and so I'm always prone to go down those same rabbit holes because I don't see accurately, especially my own weaknesses or my own biases or my own distractions. Yes. And so I have to be wise to that and realize that every time I'm looking at something, I have these preconceptions. And, you know, on the one hand, I guess I've adopted them, or they've come to be part of me because I felt that they were necessary and I needed them in order to live in the world. and deal with whatever challenges I face on a regular basis. So thank you.
I think that's very helpful, what you just described. I think recognizing the need for patience, it takes a while sometimes to break a habit, even after you recognize it as not being useful or helpful. It's still, like you say, it's work. So especially in the beginning.
Yeah, well, so there seems to be this discerning between a good sit and a bad sit. And I've learned enough that on days that I have a quote unquote bad sit where I'm very distracted, that's part of the process, and it's the coming back, and that's the work. So it's never really a bad sit. But I noticed that the days that I have a quote unquote good sit, I'm able to shed everything and just get into this equanimous space that I've talked about, where it's like just kind of got this in the kind of already this momentum that I can just kind of leap into. But I feel that on the days that I'm able to access that point, it really requires me to buckle down and to will myself into it. I can get in that state and then I'm there. Hmm. But it requires a lot of, it feels like grasping. So my point is like, what's the point of getting to that place if it requires me buckling down?
Good question. So in meditation, there are lots of different states. And one of the things that we refer to is Zen sickness. Mm-hmm. Zen sickness is when you become attached to one of those states. Mm-hmm. So have it, watch it, see it, let it go. Because it's not where it's at. It's just another state. Mm-hmm. It's just part of the experience of shedding your persona and your natural propensities for things being a certain way and clearing. So as you clear and the mind becomes calmer, you know, you reach these various states of samadhi or whatever you want to call it, but don't get attached to them. Let them come, let them go, because there's always another one. Mm-hmm. And then actually, I think what you might find over a period of time is that what we consider difficult practice, when our sitting is difficult, is actually the better practice,
right?
Because you're getting more done. You're not getting stuck in this state of sort of a doldrum almost. Because at first it's exciting. Right. What's this? Yeah. And then as you grab onto it, it becomes a burden. Yeah.
But there does seem to be this kind of notion amongst lay people in the outside world that, well, that's why you meditate, is to reach this equanimity.
Uh-huh.
That calm zone, and then if you lose it, that's you gotta get back to it.
Yeah.
And even I used to struggle with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty blissful. But,
yeah.
But the acknowledge the bliss is to crave it, to want it, to desire.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you can acknowledge it without attaching to it. You could see it.
Bliss.
Yeah. All right now. Oh, bliss. Okay. Yeah, thank you. That was a good question.
I have another question. Om Nam. Could you talk a little bit about that? You referred to it as the purity of the universe.
Yeah. I first started using that when Chungan Sunim came. He used to start every lecture with repeating that seven times. And I was very curious about it. And I remember when I was back in yoga, I chanted several different variations of Om Nams and other very similar type chants. And I remember feeling really good about them and really liking them when I did them. So I think, I don't know, over maybe three or four times that Sunim shared that experience with us, it clicked for me that this was something that I would like to also incorporate at certain times into our practice, because I think it's a really beautiful settling of the energy and a focus into a more universal space. So it kind of takes us out of our selfing, if you will, into a more peaceful, universal kind of experience just through sound. So that's why I thought it would be a good way to start the retreat, sort of help set the tone that it was more than just this little self sitting here. This was Om Nam, the universe in its purity. So, but thank you for asking that. I hope you enjoyed that. I enjoyed doing it. You know, I think when Sunim does it, it's usually in a lecture situation. So there's a crowd of people. And I think it helps him to establish a kind of presence before a lecture, because it's not necessarily a retreat or where everybody's practicing Zen. There's just people who are curious and coming there for all kinds of reasons and have all kinds of agendas and ideas about what it is they're there to experience. So I think I liked the way he used it to establish a kind of presence and then take it from there.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. I'm thinking I wouldn't mind doing that on a regular basis. It's just kind of a way to settle in, like you're saying, and mm-hmm. get connected, making those sounds. It's more proactive, like something I can do to help myself prepare to meditate.
Absolutely.
From my experience, that kind of sound, musical sound, it sets the entire body at the same vibration, so that different parts of your body aren't vibrating at different rates.
Yeah.
And that's important.
Good question. Thanks, Peter. Anything else today? Well, it's been a good, fruitful weekend. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Be well. Take care.